Welcome to the Morning Magazine for Tuesday, January 5th. Hi, I'm Sam Fuqua. Coming up after our headlines, how idle oil and gas wells are preventing some lands from being managed for other public benefits here in the Rocky Mountain West. Also, we'll hear from some University of Colorado environmental studies students about the need for more green space in Denver. And the KGNU comment line, where listeners respond to what they hear on the station. BBC News headlines again, and then How on Earth, the KGNU Science Show. Today, a look at the ketogenic diet, a high-fat, low-carb approach to losing weight and keeping cholesterol low. The Wit and the Wisdom of Alan Watts every Tuesday morning at 9, and then our day of eclectic music begins at 9:30. With the Morning Sound Alternative. All still ahead, all made possible by the listener members of KGNU. Thanks, members. Checking some state and local news now. Monday marked a return to lower levels of coronavirus restrictions for 33 counties in Colorado, including all of the metro area. But a member of the state's virus modeling task force says the relaxed rules come at a challenging time. Dr. John Samet, the dean of the Colorado School of Public Health, told the Denver Post that the lower restrictions will have to be watched carefully. He says loosening the rules on things like indoor dining, while school districts also plan to return to in-person learning, could pose a challenge to health systems if the virus surges again. Under the return to what is called orange level restrictions, restaurants can reopen for in-person dining at 25% capacity. Fitness centers can also reopen with 25% capacity, and in-person gatherings of up to 10 people from two different households are also allowed again. But COVID-19 cases are still high in Colorado. The state reported more than 14,000 new cases last week. That's a slight increase after 3 weeks of declining case numbers. Hospitalizations have also decreased, but are still at their highest numbers of the pandemic, and health officials continue to express concern about easing the dining and other restrictions while case numbers remain high. At the same time, counties are implementing their vaccination plans. Boulder County rolled out their new community vaccine notification program, as we hear in this report from Steve Miller.
Under the new program, Boulder County residents can now sign up to be notified when they are able to receive the coronavirus vaccine. The Daily Camera reports that to be notified when the vaccine becomes available for your priority group, sign up at the county's website, bouldercounty.org. Phase one of the distribution first goes to the almost 30,000 county residents who are 70 years old or older, as well as teachers, grocery store employees, and other frontline workers. County spokesperson Chana Gusettis said that the new notification system is separate from the notification system for healthcare workers and first responders. She also added that the county has been receiving 500 to 700 doses each week. Since the vaccine supply remains limited, it will be months before every Boulder County resident in Phase 1 receives the shot. Boulder County reported Monday that there have been 155 coronavirus cases and two new deaths. The two who died were in their 70s and 90s and were residents of long-term care facilities. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The state's largest utility announced Monday that it will close a Northwest Colorado coal plant 2 years ahead of schedule. Xcel Energy says the coal-fired units at its plant in Hayden will be shut down in 2028 instead of 2030. A Sierra Club representative, quoted in the Denver Post, praised the early closure, but said Xcel should also be moving to close its coal plant in Pueblo, which is twice as big as the plant in Hayden. National Weather Service forecasting mostly sunny skies today with temperatures reaching below 50s. Overnight lows in the 20s, sunny tomorrow with temperatures Wednesday in the high 40s. It's 10 minutes after 8 at listener-supported KGNU. As part of our ongoing regional look at the oil and gas industry, we turn next to wells on public lands. With changing commodity prices and speculation, oil and gas wells on public lands aren't always pumping. Justin Higginbottom investigates the lost zones in Utah, where wells are holding land from wilderness management, if not polluting.
Last spring, the price of oil plummeted. Around Utah, producers began shutting in wells and temporarily stopping production. It's not unusual. The pause in extraction can last a month, a year, or even decades. For operators, it's no big deal. Public land management for oil and gas in Utah follows a three-stage process. First, the Bureau of Land Management prepares a resource management plan, or what land will be available for oil and gas leasing. Then, the agency offers parcels for development. Finally, they receive drilling proposals. Here's Landon Newell, a staff attorney at the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance.
The management plans for Utah were largely prepared during the George W. Bush administration. And all of the plans put a finger on development.
Not only that, but leases are often offered at rock-bottom prices, sometimes for less than a cup of coffee per acre. Utah's had 153 bids of $10 per acre or less between 2007 and 2017, according to Taxpayers for Common Sense. This low cost of leasing has led to what Newell and others call lease speculation. Companies can buy up leases and sit on them without developing, and this has had an impact on how that land is managed.
The BLM will oftentimes decline from protecting a certain area that could be for wildlife reasons or for water quality reasons or for wilderness character reasons because there's an existing oil and gas lease.
There are non-producing wells that hold land throughout southeastern Utah, an area of the country increasingly prized for its remote and untouched wilderness.
There was a well drilled down on an area of land called Hatch Point, and this well was drilled, I believe, in the 80s or the early 90s. And it's not a producing well, never has been. It's been shut in since it was drilled.
There's an oil well shut in since 2011, just north of Dead Horse Point State Park, owned by Wesco Operating, a Golden Eagle exploration gas well that's only produced 66 days since 2008, is in the Paradox Basin. Another well just north of Hoven Wheat National Monument has produced for around 2 months since the spring of 2013. It's owned by Diversified Energy. And Newell says there are decades of old leases in the Box Death Hollow Wilderness area.
And like the well in Hatch Point, those leases have never been put into production.
Once a lease is sold to a company, it can be renewed easily every 10 years. The BLM can't prohibit development unless there are no surface occupancy restrictions. When the price of oil collapsed in the spring, refineries scaled back production across the country. The only option for some producers was to shut in their wells. According to Utah's Division of Oil, Gas, and Mining, the number of shut-in wells were 10% higher during May and June of 2020 compared to the previous year. That totaled just over 400 idled wells. Production has rebounded, and the number of shut-in wells is now only around 8% higher. Deputy Director Bart Kettle says the state is tasked with checking the integrity of non-producing wells and making sure they aren't abandoned by operators.
The number one thing that we're going to look at as wells are shut in is if there's mechanical integrity. Does it isolate that well from potential usable sources of drinking water?
If the well isn't polluting, it can hold the land. Jason O'Neill at the Western Values Project says it's time we update our laws. He says we should start by changing the Mineral Leasing Act of 1920.
So our guiding document for how we go forward with how we lease our public lands in these important areas and is based on a 100-year-old law. Quite frankly, it's wildly out of date.
Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, along with New Mexico Senator Tom Udall, introduced bipartisan legislation last year to do just that. The Fair Returns for Public Lands Act increases royalty rates from 12.5% to 18.75%, and it increases the minimum bids for leasing from $2 per acre to $10. O'Neill says we need laws like this to make leases more costly. Without change, Utah could get the worst of both worlds, no production or protection.
You know, you can have areas that become sort of lost zones, right? I mean, these areas aren't great places and have undermined the wildlife habitat opportunities.
Oil is still under $40 per barrel. The price may rebound eventually in Utah, but for those holding leases, it doesn't really need to. The land is theirs. Justin Higginbottom reporting for KZMU.
Stream KGNU from your mobile device or computer. Connect and listen to any of our online streams with our mobile player from your phone, tablet, or computer. KGNU.org offers high-quality streaming for listeners on the go. News.KGNU.org holds endless current event stories. AfterFM.com provides a 24/7 all-music stream online, coupled with archives of studio sessions, interviews, and features. Want a hands-free listening experience? Just tell your smart speaker to play KGNU Radio.
16 minutes after 8 now, listener-supported KGNU. Well, as Denver grows, the green space shrinks. All that pavement can have a negative impact on the health of residents. KGNU partnered with environmental studies students at the University of Colorado to look at a variety of environmental issues, including the push to bring more trees and green space to Colorado's largest city. Students Kara McConnell and Haley Sullivan have this report.
The sounds of nature have become a luxury often reserved for the white and affluent. In Denver, Colorado, green spaces such as public parks and gardens are typically concentrated in wealthy neighborhoods, allowing middle-class families regular access to these spaces. This leads to a lack of well-managed green spaces in areas that are primarily dominated by minority and low-income groups and causes a discriminatory issue in which green spaces are becoming increasingly exclusive towards disadvantaged communities. Leah Schaefer is the director of programs at the Park People Organization, which seeks to connect individuals with green spaces to support community well-being as a whole.
Because it's so important that people do have equitable access, but more and more we're starting to understand that there's really negative impacts when people don't have access to parks. There's health impacts. I mean, childhood obesity, asthma, things like that, mental health issues from lack of access to parks and the ability to get outside and live healthy lifestyles. That, and you throw in pollution and erosion and safety, and all of these things are being revealed to tie into parks in ways that we didn't fully understand before and are still learning a lot more about.
Schaefer believes that it's important to consider the most effective ways to address these issues without discriminating against disadvantaged groups. The Park People is attempting to achieve this through providing trees to communities in need.
We've provided over 60,000 trees over the lifetime of the program. That's enough trees to plant one every 25 feet across the entire state of Colorado.
By offering a community-led solution, those being directly impacted by the lack of green space can take a stand against these injustices. Once trees are planted, it costs time and money to keep them healthy and growing. That is why city support is crucial, according to Denver City Councilwoman Candy C. DeBaca.
You, as the property owner, are required to pay for that, to pay for that upkeep. You could potentially lose your house to the city for that $5,000 tree. And so that is a relationship that I think needs to be changed. And it could facilitate adding more green space without taking property space away. And so I think just when we do helpful things for neighborhoods, like give them trees, we've got to think of the whole picture and not just the tree.
C. DeBaca also points out that Denver water is an important missing party at the table. An important element in addressing this problem going forward is that Denver water has the power to build and support irrigation infrastructures that are necessary to add green spaces to neighborhoods in need.
They're not at the table, and in fact, they place a higher burden, a higher taxation burden, but we call it a fee, on poor people. We actually charge neighborhoods with less impervious space more for their water than we do neighborhoods who have more impervious space. And so educating the community that they're being taxed more for green space, even if they're not paying for irrigation, is information that the public doesn't have.
The issue of green space distributions in Denver is evidently very complicated, and solving these inequities requires not only the cooperation of community members, but for the Denver Department of Parks and Rec to take responsibility for managing these spaces. From speaking with Leah and Candy, we understand that there are many perspectives to consider when addressing this issue. Moving forward, we hope listeners share this information with others and join in on the fight for more creative approaches to green spaces management and development.
And thanks to CU Environmental Studies students Kara McConnell and Haley Sullivan for that report. It's 21 minutes after 8. You're in tune with listener-supported KGNU.
Thinking about turning your garage into something more? Like maybe a game room or a home gym? Make room for your dreams by getting rid of the biggest obstacle in your way, that unwanted vehicle. We'll have it picked up at no cost to you and use the proceeds to support KGNU. Call 1-844-KGNU-CAR or learn more at kgnu.org.
Up next, a regular feature of Tuesday mornings here on the magazine, the KGNU comment line. Listeners respond to what they hear on the station. Here's this week's comment line.
Hello. I wanted to give a big shout-out to David Barsamian for airing Chris Hedges' talk, Beyond the Politics of Despair, on Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020. I've been listening to Chris Hedges for years, and I actually met the man when he spoke at a large anti-fracking gathering in Denver a few years back. And although Chris's talk sort of amounted to a virtual nugget of coal in my Christmas radio listening, Vince Hedges never fails to plunge you headlong into worst-case scenarios, almost calculated to depress and dismay you. I was nonetheless heartened to hear that he allowed, in a question session afterwards, that Chris Hedges was actually encouraged by Black Lives Matter protests this year and how that could result in real political change. Being able to hear that Hedges was encouraged by anything, especially by white youth taking up the cause of Black Lives Matter, was a very positive change. Thank you. I want to thank the KGNU producer who created the interview with Zachary Carter on the Thursday night show that's usually It's the Economy on December 17th, 2020. As an economics instructor myself, who was well aware of the contributions of Keynes, I think this worldview of Keynes and the approach that was presented during the interview about how we can solve our largest economic problems, it's not well understood by the general public, or for that matter, by our elected representatives. So by publishing talks like this, it can help raise awareness of the understanding of our economic situation. And the biggest takeaway that I had from the interview was the author's relating of one of Keynes's fundamental observations about national economic policy. And it's that if we can do it, we can afford it. This simple nutshell shows the power of government deficit spending during the crisis, which is good advice for all our political representatives that should be taking better care of us in these trying times. And it was such a good interview, I went out and bought the book. Thanks again.
Hi, yes, this is James, and I appreciate KGNU in so many ways. The first I wanted to note is about the Shortwave Report, an excellent program. An excellent example of ground-up journalism. On this last show, John Pilger was being interviewed and had several things to say. One is that the most important thing of the 21st century is knowing how the world works. So getting our information independent and accurate. From there, we can sort out the propaganda. And he called it the pandemic and the tsunami of propaganda coming out there. And another thing he describes is the top-down reporting that the corporate media give. And he said that he interviews BBC executives where they say, we report what Blair and the others say. When asked about the lying, he says, it's not our job to question their lies. And that's an example of top-down reporting, whereas independent is grassroots, ground up. The other thing he said was that the grassroots, ground-up journalism doesn't get reported. He's got a quote from somebody that says, it didn't happen. So I was a little bit chagrined to see Don DeBar's program get axed. It's like it didn't happen. So that was very disconcerting. DeBar's program to me is an excellent example of journalism that, from the grassroots, the ground up, providing information and perspectives so rarely seen, rarely heard on the airwaves. I am glad to see the addition of that Spanish program, the Excelente, Bienvenida. Well, my last point is maybe I missed some coverage of the sham extradition trial of Julian Assange. By the way, don't believe this smear. That's an example of top-down. We're told how to think of it. As Pilger was saying, the corporate media, the mainstream media, have nothing to fear because they are with that. However, the independent grassroots ground-up media like KGNU, like the ideal KGNU, is in serious jeopardy. My solution is something that hasn't been covered much in the mainstream media, is that strike of 250 million people in India going on strike. I think I would like to propose that potential idea. So thank you.
My comment is I really just want to shout out Blake Britton, because he has really been an amazing DJ this year and really stepped up and really rocked the house numerous times. And I just feel like he is a great growing DJ on the air at KGNU. I also want to shout out Deep Rock Dave, because he really kept us informed of all the protests and all the alternative kind of news that was going on. He was really right there on the street, bringing us that information that was very important to know. So, yeah, right on KGNU.
Thanks for your calls to the comment line. Lots of calls this past week. We couldn't get to all of them, but we'll play the rest of them next week. The comment line number is 303-447-9911. Leave your message anytime. It's a voicemail, and we play the comments over the air every Tuesday morning here on the KGNU Morning Magazine, where it's time for news from the BBC.